morning. We are Azadeh Dastyari
and Runley Sifras.
And welcome to the fifth episode of The Scarlet Letter, the podcast of the Feminist Legal Studies Group at Monash University's Faculty of Law. As with our previous episode, we are joined by the wonderful Tamara Wilkinson.
Hi.
You may remember that Tamara is a researcher in the Faculty of Law and a Monash University graduate. She spent the past 3 years researching Australian innovation and venture capital law and is responsible for managing an Australian Research Council grant focused on designing world-class venture capital programs.
Like our last episode, Tamara will be a guest interviewer and she'll be helping me interview my co-host, Runley.
Runley's main area of research focuses on women's reproductive rights and the intersection between reproductive rights, health and the law, both domestic and international, which is obviously extremely relevant.
Runley, perhaps you can start by telling us, what does feminism mean to you?
So feminism to me, I think, is really about equality of opportunity, which sounds really basic, but I think that's what it is at its roots. It's about thinking about a world where people are equal, which means for me, being a feminist is actually about a lot more than just talking about women's rights. You know, in our episode, our last episode where we interviewed Azadeh, we were talking about, you know, other rights like the rights of asylum seekers. And I think really if we're going to envisage a society where women are equal, we also need to think about a society where we're advocating for people who suffer from other forms of discrimination, whether that's race-based discrimination or discrimination based on disability or whatever it is. We need to be thinking about feminism in a much broader way, because women can't be equal unless we're also fighting for other groups who are in some way marginalised or vulnerable.
Yeah. Is there a point when you started identifying as a feminist?
So for me, not unlike what you were discussing in the interview that we did when we interviewed you last episode, I wouldn't say there was one point in time. I'd say it was more something that's been with me forever, if you like. And I think in some ways it's kind of, you know, both genetic and epigenetic, in the sense that it's been passed down in a way. So my maternal great-grandmother has kind of legendary status in our family. So that's my mother's mother's mother, because she really was a feminist before that became a popular word, and would never have called herself a feminist. Yep. But in her actions, that's very much what she was. And she was a woman who had to leave school when she was 8 years old, so she had no real formal education, came from a very poor family, and then fled Lithuania. She fled persecution fled to South Africa, and so arrived with, you know, no English language and no formal education. And my grandmother always used to talk about the fact that despite all of that, she was one of the few children at school who had shoes to wear and a hot lunch.
Wow.
Because my grandmother's mother was so industrious and innovative that she managed to buy a cow and then use the milk to make butter and cream and sell
that.
And she had boarders in her house, and so she got some money that way. And, you know, by sort of doing all of that, she was able to really be the primary breadwinner and homemaker.
Amazing.
So, yeah, really quite extraordinary when I think about that. So for me, it was just, has always been a kind of way of being. And I've never really thought about it until things sort of happened in my life that made me realise, oh, yeah, like the way I think is not necessarily the way everybody thinks.
It's confronting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Always a disappointing realisation. So, given that much of your research is focused on reproductive rights, which is in many ways an inherently feminist research agenda, can you tell us a bit about how you first became interested in this field of research?
Sure. So for me, it was kind of incremental. I started off feeling as though international human rights more broadly was kind of my calling, as I think a lot of people do. And I went and did a master's at NYU, which was focused on, it was a master's in international legal studies. And as part of that, most of the units I chose were sort of human rights-based units. So I was always interested in that area, and I increasingly became interested in women's rights as human rights. So then when I decided to do a PhD, it made sense that I was going to focus on a women's rights kind of issue. And the issues which, for me, which I was finding particularly compelling was the intersection of kind of women's rights and health. And so that's where I started looking into reproductive rights issues. And because my background was in international legal studies, my PhD really focused on the international law side of things. So I ended up looking at the international legal prohibition of torture and looking at whether restrictions on women's reproductive freedom, so restrictions on abortion or involuntary sterilisation procedures, whether they could be categorised as either torture or cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment. So really it sort of has all then flown from my PhD, because once I finished my PhD I realised, well, there's also lots of interesting stuff happening at the domestic level when it comes to reproductive rights. Mm. You know, not all Australian jurisdictions have even decriminalised abortion. Mm. So there's lots going on right here. So now my research kind of straddles between the international realm and the domestic realm in terms of looking at reproductive rights issues.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Can you tell us a bit about particular areas of your research that really sort of link with feminist ideas? What are some of your main areas of focus?
They're kind of all to
I can imagine.
So I do a lot of work on abortion rights. Yeah. And that's clearly an inherently feminist issue in terms of, you know, if women don't have control over their own bodies. That's really the starting point, that right to reproductive autonomy and to self-determination, the right to choose when and whether to continue with a pregnancy is a key feminist issue. But also other areas like I've done some work on involuntary sterilisation, which is, I think, really interesting from a feminist standpoint, because it's not immediately apparent that it's a feminist issue, because you think, well, men can also be subjected to involuntary sterilisation. That's not like abortion where, you know, only women become pregnant.
Yeah.
And yet if you look at sort of circumstances globally where there's been kind of mass sterilisation programs like Indigenous women in Peru, or, you know, there have been many instances of Romani women in Eastern Europe being sterilised without, you know, full informed consent. You realise that actually in most cases it is women who are being targeted, subject to a few exceptions. So it raises some really serious and interesting feminist questions about, you know, society's control over women's bodies, particularly where in the case of sterilisation, the vasectomy, which is the male procedure, is a much easier medical procedure than any of the sterilisation procedures performed on women. So I think that's a really interesting feminist issue. And then an issue which I've been focusing on a lot recently has been surrogacy, which is also really interesting from a feminist perspective, particularly compensated or commercial surrogacy, where a surrogate receives some form of compensation. And that's really interesting, I think, because feminists have been very polarised on that issue. So, you know, some feminists have come out and said that it's a terrible thing, that it's commodification of women, that it's exploitation of women. And certainly in some circumstances it can be. My personal view is that that's not a generalisable position. And other feminists have come out and said, well, You know, in fact, it's exploitative to require that, you know, to say that if a woman wants to be a surrogate, she can't be paid when doctors can be paid for providing fertility-based services, and certainly the clinics can be paid. Why not an individual woman? That sort of perpetuates the idea that women should perform, you know, the work of gestation and childbearing for no money, for no compensation. I think that that's a really interesting feminist issue as well.
I also know that you're doing some really interesting work with Tania. I don't know how you do it all. I mean, all the different areas that you work in and the incredible work you're producing. But on top of that, you're doing some empirical research with Tania. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, so that's been a really great experience. My colleague Tania Penovich and I, who's also part of the Feminist Legal Studies group, so I'm sure there'll be an interview with her in due course, we've been doing interviews with staff who work at clinics that provide the full range of reproductive health services, to talk to them about the protests which used to take place outside Australian, some Victorian abortion clinics, and the effects of those protests, and then to talk to them about the legislation that was brought in to try to stop that protesting from occurring, and you know, what the effect of that legislation has actually been. So that's been a fascinating experience for us to get those insights, and we're planning to expand that research Australia-wide, and to also interview people working at clinics in other states where safe access zones don't currently exist, so that we can really do proper comparisons about the status where there is legislation preventing that sort of protesting to where there is no such legislation.
Given you work on so many different issues, what do you think are kind of the pressing law reform needs in Australia today? Where do you think we need to change?
So I think decriminalisation of abortion is an absolute no-brainer. To me, it is absolutely mind-boggling that in the year 2017 there are still jurisdictions in Australia where abortion sits on the criminal statute.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, so New South Wales is one example where abortion is still technically a crime, and there have been attempts in recent months to decriminalise, but the bill didn't get through Parliament. And so I think that's absolutely extraordinary that the numbers weren't there in Parliament to actually pass decriminalisation legislation. Similarly, in Queensland, we actually had a prosecution in 2010, which is not very long ago, of a young couple. You know, I think she was 20 and he was 21, and they were prosecuted under the under the criminalisation of abortion laws for medical abortions. So they basically imported the abortion drug from the Ukraine, and in a police raid it was found, and they were prosecuted. So I think that is absolutely extraordinary, that level of interference in people's private lives. I just don't think it should be the business of the law to be intruding in people's health and privacy in that way.
But to what extent, when we're talking about law of these bills, is it men's voices that are being heard in these debates rather than women's?
Look, I mean, I think it's hard to say. I haven't actually looked at that particular issue closely. What I think is really interesting in the work that Tania and I have been doing on the protests outside abortion clinics is that it is notable that a lot of the protesters seem to be kind of older white men protesting against what women should be allowed to do with their bodies. So I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
My understanding is that a lot of the opposition in the New South Wales Parliament to decriminalisation in that state, a lot of the very strong sort of vocal opposition has come from male politicians. But I couldn't give you the stats.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ronley. I wish we could just sit down and ask you about your research for hours and hours and hours. I think there's so much to learn from you about the work that you do. But I guess that's it for today. Another time, hopefully.
Well, thank you guys very much. That was, fantastic to be able to share in that way.
And thank you all for listening to The Scarlet Letter.